Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. We're so glad to be recording our show today in front of a live audience at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. Thank you all so much for being here for our show. And we have a great panel of Middle Georgia political experts, insiders, elected officials, former elected officials. So we have a lot to talk about. Let me start by introducing my partner, Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the AJC.
Thank you, thank you.
You read him on Wednesdays and Sundays in the Dead Tree edition of the AJC, and of course he oversees the Political Insider blog at myajc.com. How many of you are Political Insider fans?
That means I can work another year.
We have two representatives from Mercer University, both of whom have been on our show in the past, and we're always glad when they're on. First of all, let me introduce the chairman of the political science department at Mercer, Professor Chris Grant. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Having me.
And his colleague, political science professor Lori Johnson.
Hi, everybody. Glad you can make it.
We also have with us tonight Senator John F. Kennedy, 18th District here in Macon. Tell us about the boundaries of your district beyond Macon.
Sure, Bill. Thank you. And first, thank you for bringing your show to Macon. We're delighted to have you and welcome you. The 18th District includes all of Monroe, Peach, Crawford, and Upson counties, and the north, west, and south portion of Bibb County, just outside where we are now, and the northern part of Houston County.
What term are you in?
Ending my second term, and I'll begin my third term in January.
And for a guy who hasn't been there all that long, you're in an important leadership position in the Senate.
He's already a floor leader.
Huh?
He's the governor's
floor leader. That's my point.
Well, I've been very blessed with some good opportunities, and I've been very blessed.
Yeah, that's my point. Not bad. We also are joined tonight by former state representative Nikki Randall. Thank you for being here tonight, Nikki. You served for how many terms?
It was 17 years.
Was it that long?
Yes.
You must have started when you were seven.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us, too. All right, we have a lot to talk about tonight. Jim Galloway, very quickly, we're not going to have a lot of time to get into it in depth, but you just saw two truly breaking news stories, stories that have just moved within the last few minutes.
Right, right. Number one, the NRA has endorsed Casey Cagle in the race for governor, along with David Schaefer in the race for lieutenant governor. The former is important because, of course, Cagle got into the little tiff with Delta over the jet fuel tax exemption, and Brian Kemp was trying to rip it away.
Yeah, Brian
from him.
Kemp wrote a letter to Chris Cox, who is I think the COO of NRA. He's certainly in one of the leadership roles.
Yeah, and he says you've been Casey Cagle'd, you've been snookered, but the NRA is sticking with basically treating Cagle as an incumbent.
Let me ask about, Senator, do you have a candidate in this race at this point?
I do, Bill.
Are you supporting?
I support Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle.
Okay, so how important is the NRA endorsement in Georgia?
Well, it's typically very important. There are a lot of folks, certainly outside of Atlanta, but all around the state, that are NRA members or they're gun owners, or they have those traditional set of conservative values that largely align with the NRA. So, yeah, that's a big deal, and I think it's well deserved for Casey Cagle to have that endorsement.
Certainly important, Nikki, in a primary contest. I wonder, given the charged atmosphere around NRA, especially since Parkland, whether that will go as far in a general election when Democrats weigh in. What are your thoughts on that?
I think in the general election, it may be somewhat harmful to an NRA endorsed candidate. You know, there are a lot of folks in Georgia that are gun owners, but not gun enthusiasts, and so I think that's going to make the difference. I don't know. He may want to move away from NRA when it comes to the general, but I doubt if he
will. It's I will tell you about what it, where it's going to matter is among Republican women, suburban Republican women, in this general election contest, and whether or not the events in Parkland and Las Vegas and the NRA response, quite frankly, has peeled those women away.
Chris, Laurie.
I would just say I'm not sure how many voters that would be animated by the NRA have not previously come out and voted in the past. So while I think it could be important in the primary, and certainly matters in terms of intra-party politics on the Republican side, I'm not sure that it may be what former Representative Randall says, it may be a liability come general election.
Laurie, I see you nodding. Is that because he's a department chair or because you agree with him?
I was actually agreeing with Jim. I think that women will make a difference on this issue. And I think the point about gun owners versus gun enthusiasts, I mean, there's a lot of gun owners who still support reasonable regulations that will help keep guns out of the hands of people we don't want to have them. And the NRA hasn't been flexible on that.
It strikes me as a significant endorsement right now. General.
Right. In a primary, if you're Casey Cagle and you're trying to get out of this primary without a runoff, It was essential for him to get that
endorsement. There you go. And there is still some sense that perhaps that could happen.
Not certain, but probably unlikely, but it could still happen.
You have another breaking story.
Yeah, we have. Of course, we had senators in the state capitol meet for 4 hours behind doors to examine a sexual harassment claim against David Schaefer, who, as we said, is kind of the presumptive front runner in the race for lieutenant governor. They ended their meeting without saying anything. They're not required by law to say anything. But immediately after that, Schaefer has sent out a message that says he wants that report made public, which I think is that shows a little bit of chutzpah.
Yeah, it does. But on the other hand, he has said over and over and over again that this is pure political poison being aimed at him. So transparency might be his best hope of surviving what some people think could be an awful scandal for him, Chris.
Sure, and I think it makes sense that if the report exonerates him, he wants to get that news out there. But I defer to Dr. Johnson, who's a lawyer by training as well.
Well, I mean, as long as he's got sexual harassment connected with his name, it's a problem in and of itself. So he wants to have more information is better than just that connection.
Sarah, how did this play among your colleagues in the Senate when all this was being reported? How did you all look at this? Did you stay away from David a little bit? Did you jump right in and tell him you're still with him? How did that feel?
Well, it's not any situation anyone wants to find themselves in if you're David Schaefer, obviously, nor quite frankly as a member of the Senate. Our process and our ethics committee, chaired by Senator Dean Burke, I think has done a very good job. That process, by its own rules, necessarily for the protection of everyone involved on the front end, is a confidential process. And quite frankly, that process was kept confidential from us senators as well, unless you were on the ethics committee, and which I'm not. So you, quite frankly, Bill, you probably know more about it, or Jim probably knows more about it than I do.
But the question for Schaefer, the immediate question for Schaefer is, does it hurt his fundraising? He's in a three-way race?
Yes.
Three-way race with Rick Jeffries and Jeff Duncan. And both of them are showing a little bit of strength. So he too is going to have to survive a runoff.
Nikki, here's another issue where we're saying, how are women, suburban Republican women, going to respond to this issue?
Well, I think I agree. I totally agree with you that transparency will be the saving grace in this. You know, we're in the climate with the Me Too and all other movements, and a lot of folks that are in other cases that are in the news. It's going to make a difference whether women feel that he's guilty or not. And just the accusation is going to hurt him among some women.
Especially because for many people, this is the way he's introduced to the state. In Casey Cagle's case, we know who Casey Cagle is. He's been lieutenant governor for 12 years. For a lot of people, this is the first introduction of David Schaefer's first time they've noticed him, and it's a connection with a sexual harassment scandal. And that's not helpful, even if there's nothing to it.
All right. Jim, one more breaking story. We saw this about middle of the afternoon, actually, and some of you out here probably have seen it by now. Jim Galloway, President Trump, according to the Washington Post had it first, New York Times picked up on it quickly. President Trump, who campaigned against the Trans-Pacific Partnership throughout his entire campaign, pulled the United States out of the partnership, now says, he's telling his senior people, maybe we ought to look at how we get back in. And this is a story that is meaningful here in Middle Georgia, isn't it?
Well, this is to me, I've been watching what's been happening with the tariff argument for the last 3 weeks. And actually, what I've been doing is I've been tracking where Sonny Perdue is going and what he's being asked and the concern that farmers are expressing to him. And these farmers are worried. They are, and they're losing they fear losing their Asian market. Trump has kind of, when he pulled out of the TPP, the problem with pulling out of the TPP is he wanted to do one-on-one negotiations with all these countries, including China. But by pulling out of the TPP, which is kind of an alliance with 12 other nations, all in Asia, he kind of gives up that the bargaining clout that he's got with China. And now you've got this tit-for-tat war building. Of course, soybeans are a target, and what does Georgia grow other than pecans and peanuts and everything else? It grows soybeans. And that could hurt come fall.
You made an interesting point. Where do most of the soybeans come? Are they from down this way?
Right now, most soybeans being sold are out of Brazil.
Yes, I know that. But here in the state, are they from right around this area?
A little south of here, Macon County.
Yeah, south.
So Senator Galloway made an interesting point on our show the other day. Right now, the soybean fields are fallow here in Georgia. But they're going to start being harvested and sold right around the time of the November elections. Could be. If he hasn't figured out a way to resolve all this, this could be a bad sign for Republicans, couldn't it, in the fall election?
Yes, it could be dicey. It certainly could. And agriculture is so very important to our entire state. It's very important to Middle Georgia and our district here. And I know our farmers are watching this, and we've got to make sure, to the extent that we can, to try to influence things in a reasonable way. The president is, as we know, he's flexible, and he changes his mind. And
flexible. Lori, Chris, is that the word you might apply?
Probably not. I mean, you know, the interesting thing with the Trans-Pacific Partnership is they were more than willing to go along without us. And China was happy that we dropped out and could take advantage of that. So whether they want us back in is an open question.
I do wonder if in his desire to get tougher, to get better trade agreements, reasonable goal, I suppose. But I wonder if in trying to get back in, we've lost our lever. I mean, what kind of terms might the rest of the TPP try to impose to get the country back in, Chris?
I'm teaching American foreign policy this semester, and one of the things we talk about is the need to be predictable. Predictable hawk, predictable dove. This administration, unlike any other administration in my lifetime, is unpredictable. It is constant change and surprise. That makes the United States not have as good of a negotiating point as it would if you were predictable, either side of predictability. You don't have to be liberal predictive or conservative predictable, just consistent. And the last thing I'd say is that Georgia's a trade state. We benefit from trade. We have trade in and we have trade out. We do a lot with trade. Making trade wars is usually not good for states that are as dependent on trade as Georgia is.
Yeah, it is to that point. Let me see where Sonny was in Michigan.
Yeah.
I think, and he was telling farmers, don't worry, Donald Trump has your back. You're not going to get hurt. The next day, this is on Monday in a cabinet meeting, you've got Donald Trump saying, Farmers are patriots.
You want the quote?
Yeah, read the quote.
Jim, you had the quote in the Insider. I tell you, our farmers are great patriots. They're great patriots. They understand that they're doing this for the country, and we'll make it up to them. And in the end, they're going to be much stronger than they are right now. I got to come to you, Mr. Republican Senator. You got a lot of farmers in your district. This isn't going to reassure them a whole lot, no matter how much you think President Trump may have done for the good of the people of this country.
Well, yeah, this is problematical, and I understand the comment from the professor about predictability as well, and that makes it all the more complicated and anxious times for farmers.
Okay,
of course.
Nikki.
I mean, I don't understand. I know the farmers don't understand what's going on, what's to be expected from our president. But, Bill, I almost thought that you think that we farm in Macon.
I said the greater area.
Because you're like, soybeans now?
Let me make it clear that I understand that Macon is an urban center. I get it. And it's a Democratic town, and I get that, too. But you have a lot of farmers in the surrounding area. It's not like they're not out there, Nikki.
Oh, yeah, they're out there.
All right.
They're out there, and they're nervous. They don't know what's going to happen, and I'm sure they're waiting for Sonny to come and visit them and tell them something good.
I want to ask, we're going to have to take a break in a second, and then we've got a really good Macon issue I want to get the panel to weigh in on. But let me turn to the audience. Next Monday, Tom Steyer is coming to Atlanta. How many, if you know that name, applaud right now. Who is? A few of you. So Tom Steyer is a multimillionaire.
Billionaire.
Billionaire who has been leading this impeach Trump effort. You know, you've seen the TV spots, you've heard him talk about it. And he's coming to hold an impeach Trump rally.
Right, Monday evening at the depot in downtown Atlanta.
So as long as we're talking Trump, before we get to how the Democratic candidates are responding to him, there's a big question out there that I want to start with you all on. Some Democrats believe the only way to energize their base for the November elections is to push as hard as they can toward impeachment. Others are saying, don't be ridiculous. We're never going to win if that's our agenda. So let me ask you first, how many of you here in this room would be more attracted to a candidate, mostly for congressional races, but at any level, for a candidate who says, my job as a Democrat is to win election and impeach Trump? Clap if you think that's the right approach. How many of you think it's absolutely wrong and that should be off the table?
Okay, yeah.
So Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans right. have made the right decision.
Right, right. I called both of the Democratic candidates for governor, and they said they would not be showing up for this rally on Monday.
Nikki, where do you stand on that?
Oh, I wouldn't show up at that. But, you know, I'm totally neutral these days. I'm not elected anymore.
No, but you're still, you know, still care about politics, and you certainly want to see Democrats win. That a better issue to just forget about? If you win the majority, maybe then?
Bill, I'm totally neutral these days.
Oh, okay. All right. What do you guys think?
I think we need to wait for the Mueller report. I think most people do. I think the rush on that is what we're fighting now, that, you know, it took 2+ years to sort out Watergate. It's going to take a while to sort this one out, too. And I think people are wanting that process to move forward.
You know, Senator, it's interesting to me because I can understand the impulse, but it seems to me that it only does your party good if Democrats are out there declaring their biggest job after the midterms is to impeach the President of the United States. It strikes me that plays to your favor.
It very well may. And I think if that's the only answer to better policy and that's your proposal is we need to get rid of this president at that draconian of a move, yeah, I think it probably does help Republicans.
And what it does, Bill, it allows Republicans to use the word coup.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that is going to make a whole lot of people uncomfortable.
All right. All right. We're in Macon, Georgia. We're on the campus of Mercer University at the university's medical school. We've got to get a break in right now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more on Political Rewind. Welcome back to Political Rewind. We're here at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, in front of a live audience in Macon. I should tell you that this is one of a number of shows that Tom Faust, our producer, is arranging for us to do in cities around the state. Our next stop, we were in Savannah about 6 weeks ago. We're here today, and next in June, I believe, we're going to be in Columbus, where one of our regular panelists, Mayor Teresa Tomlinson, a Democrat from Columbus, will be part of our balanced panel. And then we're going to be picking other locations around the state between now and the elections. We are not on the air live today because we're taping this show on Thursday night in Macon. So tweet us with your thoughts about what you're hearing. But remember, we're not going to be able to get right back to you because I think we're all taking the day off. Let's get back to our panel. Jim Galloway, of course, is with me from the AJC. We have from the Mercer University Political Science Department, Chris Grant and Lori Johnson. We have 18th District State Senator John Kennedy and former State Representative Nikki Randall. Thanks all for being here. All right, I want to take up a local issue, and I will acknowledge that this is an issue that I am not as fully informed about as I would like to. And I'm going to start with you, if I may, Senator, because I know it's something you've worked on. So how long have Macon and Bibb County had a consolidated government at this point? About?
Like 4 years?
Yeah, four years. And the notion was consolidate services, establish efficiencies, and unfortunately, what's happened now is there's a budget deficit that I'm told could be as high as $10 million. Is that a fair number?
Yes, that's what I've read as well and what I'm hearing.
All right. So is there a requirement in Macon Bibb to have a balanced budget like there is in the state government?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. So the county, the city, the county needs help. And you at the state legislature this year, the Macon delegation, had an opportunity perhaps to fix a problem, which if not fixed, is going to lead to layoffs, I assume, a reduction in services. This is dire, is it not?
Those are bad numbers, yes.
Yeah.
And I think to put it a little bit in perspective, we had a $35 million reserve fund about three and a half years ago that has now shrunk to $7 million. So we, based on the projections that you just alluded to and what I've heard, we are, if something doesn't change, we're headed to depleting, unfortunately, those reserves. So it is a significant problem. And you had asked about a potential solution for that. One of the things that the local government came to our Bibb delegation and asked us to consider, which was passing an OLOST, other local option sales tax, which is a vehicle that's unique to consolidated governments. Columbus Muskogee has availed itself of an OLOST, which is an extra penny on sales tax. We looked at it, we drafted legislation, and won't take too much time to get into the weeds, but there became a difference of opinion of how that OLOST would be implemented and how the funds would be used. And so we did not pass legislation, the local legislation. It also required changing state law as well. But that did not pass, so that's not something that the Bibb County, Macon Bibb government has available to itself for additional revenue for the upcoming year.
So Jim,
is this something that the delegation is going to try to revisit next session, or are they giving up on the idea going in another direction?
I would expect we would look at it again because I think it's attractive for multiple reasons. It raises the sales tax. It was projected to produce $26 million annually. which would have been a substantial benefit to the local government. The question became, how do you treat that? Under state law, all local option sales tax require a mandatory rollback of the millage rate. Unfortunately, the leadership didn't want that compulsory component to be a part of the formula. And so some of us, me included, thought that it should require property tax relief. And if, in fact, the local government then wanted to increase the millage rate, then they can make that choice, but they need to make that choice and be accountable and responsible to the citizens for increasing the millage rate if, in fact, that's what they wanted to do.
So you had a three mills increase in the millage rate a year plus ago, and now there is at least one proposal on the table for another five mill increase. How many of you in here would be paying that tax? I need to hear you instead of... And how many of you want to, help bail out Macon Bibb with an increase in the millage rate? Just applaud if you want it. Not a whole lot of enthusiasm, Nikki.
No.
In reality, everybody pays it, because even if you're a renter, it's channeled from your property owner to your rent. And right. So this idea that it's the property owners versus consumers who would pay more.
On a sales tax.
On a sales tax is somewhat of an artificial divide, because it affects all of us.
And I think there's some special things that we have to think about that are unique both to Georgia and to this community. One is that we have very small counties in Georgia, and we have lots of them, which means that our center cities tend to not expand out into the neighboring areas as much without crossing county lines, which changes tax rates and has tax implications. And in this community in particular, we've had a relatively stagnant growth rate now going on 20 years, not dramatic increases. And actually, there's some pretty good indications that our economic base is contracting.
Well, Jim, Chris has just set up the reason I think our statewide audience would be interested in this dilemma. This is, to some extent, there are some particular problems here that we're not going to get into because we don't know enough, frankly, to talk about them. There's been some investigations of spending and all that sort of thing. But contraction, not growth, too many counties, 159, more counties than any other state.
East
of the Mississippi River. So is this part of what we see when we talk about what we used to call the two Georges?
Yeah, this was the theme of the most recent session of the legislature, was how to rescue rural Georgia, the part of Georgia that's not Savannah, that's not Atlanta, that's kind of mostly south of I-20. How do you get, if in a region that lacks internet, that lacks health care, how do you get new businesses into that region when there's not a business in Georgia that's going to relocate into a community that doesn't have that has a dying hospital or a very sick hospital? It's just not going to happen. Am I right?
You're right, Jim. You're absolutely right. And I'm very pleased to see a focus on rural Georgia. I grew up in a very small town of 800 people.
Which town?
Adrian, Georgia.
Oh,
it's about halfway between here and Savannah. That's my hometown. Lived there until I moved to Macon at age 17 to attend Mercer University as a freshman. And so I know rural Georgia fairly well. And I'm glad to see not only the legislature's attention focusing on it, the Georgia Chamber of Commerce last year established a committee to focus on it. And so it's something we need to do. And one of the things I think Jim mentioned or alluded to, or maybe you did, Bill, is rural broadband is a very important issue for rural Georgia. Because the truth is, you really cannot attract economic development if you don't have some basic infrastructure. And nowadays, that basic infrastructure for economic development includes broadband, internet service, and among many other things. But that's been a challenge that we wrestled with, and I know you're familiar with. We passed one bill, Senate Bill 402, but there were a few other bills in the Senate that we had worked on that unfortunately did not get to pass. And I think it's going to be the focus of a lot of attention when we go back next year.
And, but Steve Gooch's bill passed, did it not? The one that allows fiber optic to be laid parallel with the Georgia interstate system?
Yes, that's Senate Bill 402.
That's and the broadband bill.
That's broadband.
But as Senator Kennedy points out, Chris, you know, there was a bigger push. There we had a whole rural development task force, and some of it just never grew.
Sure, and I ought to make one point. Macon doesn't suffer because our medical community is behind on economic development. Our medical community is at the forefront of economic development in this community. It is the number one place where good, strong-paying jobs come in, and I ought to mention my employer, Mercer University, contributes greatly to that. What those jobs have been bringing in is they do bring people into the community, and they're more affluent than a lot of the folks that used to live in the community. The problem is that when Brown Williamson plant closes down and other plants and blue collar manufacturing plants close down, we wind up with a few really high income jobs at the expense of a much larger base of good paying jobs. And that makes for economic stagnancy. And one of the evidences of this is the lone Target store in Bibb County closed down. And that is what you see when a contracting retail market exists in the community.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's why your Target and mine is so crowded now.
Yeah.
They're all coming up to our stores, Jim.
And whereas neighboring Houston County has a very vibrant community, a very vibrant middle class economic market, and there are a variety of reasons why Bibb County doesn't attract that middle class base.
Well, and yeah, it leaves Bibb County and moves to Houston or Monroe or Jones.
So here's, okay, so if this were the second year, if the next legislative session were in fact the second year of a biennial, you might be able to take those bills that didn't get through, move forward with them under the same governor, under the same leadership in the legislature. But Senator, all bets are off. You're starting from scratch, and you don't know for a fact whether you're going to have the kind of people leading state government who are going to push rural development the way that was happening this year until some of it collapsed.
Well, that's true, but I think you're going to see, because it garnered so much attention, and it deserved that attention, you're going to see that in 2019 when we go back. I think also you're going to see, I know it is something right in the middle of Casey Cagle's radar screen if he's elected governor. I know he is committed to rural Georgia and prosperity proposals for rural Georgia and broadband. So yes, we'll have folks in different roles, but I think you're going to see a renewed and additional focus on it, because a lot of us were frustrated we weren't able to do more with that, but there's finally been an acknowledgement and a realization of just how important this is to rural Georgia.
Jim, Senator sets it right up. What is Casey Cagle now suggesting?
Okay, well, this is what we got. Can I tell us just a very short story?
Sure.
All right, okay. I ran into Chris Clark last month. He's the CEO, president and CEO of the Georgia Chamber, okay? And we're on TV together, and we're gabbing about the session.
And the lawmakers on GPB television?
Yes, we are.
Oh, yeah.
We get to the topic of Medicaid expansion. Democrats say Medicaid expansion. Republicans say Medicaid waivers. I don't think there's a difference, but we'll figure that out. Anyway, Clark tells me that this conversation about expanding Medicaid has got to continue beyond the legislature, beyond the legislative session, and into the statewide races. Okay, so on Monday, I sent out a note to all my five Republican candidates for governor, and I say, here's my question: will you back Medicaid waivers to help keep rural Georgia hospitals open? I got a no answer from Tippins, Clay Tippins, but he later said no, he's not going to ask for any more federal money. Brian Kemp said no, he's not going to ask for any more federal money. Hunter Hill said no, I'm not going to ask for any more federal money. And who was that other one?
Michael Williams,
thank you, yeah. Yep, he's not going to do it. The only one who said that if the numbers work, and if it is financially smart, then it's something we should consider, and that was Casey Cagle. And I think you just saw with that an alliance building between the George Chamber and Casey Cagle, because the George Chamber says that's the most important issue on their in their bailiwick right now.
And not to dwell too much on, as we have.
By the way, both Democratic candidates would expand Medicaid.
All right. Let's turn to another. Nikki, this is a more broad question, but it kind of relates to what we've already been talking about. You know, we're dealing in Metro Atlanta, as Senator Kennedy certainly knows, there was a lot of attention paid by the legislature in general, beyond just the Metro Atlanta legislators, to money for transit. Big push. It was successful for the most part. And I'm wondering, as people here in Middle Georgia see all that's happening up there in Metro Atlanta and trying to do something about transit, do you feel sort of like the lonely stepchild who's not getting the attention you deserve in terms of your transportation needs?
Well, you know, outside of Atlanta, you always have to make sure that you're saying, hey, it's other cities in Georgia. And I lived through that. And representing Middle Georgia for as long as I did, I knew that, not dismissing that Atlanta is the economic engine of the state, and that in order for us to continue to attract business to Atlanta, we've got to make sure that transportation is, we've got to take hold of transportation. However, in outside of Atlanta, yeah, we always feel like the stepchildren down here. But right now, as far as our transportation needs, I think as far as Middle Georgia goes, most of us would just kind of wish there was a train from Macon to Atlanta.
Oh, amen. Amen.
I've been waiting for that mythical train since 1998 to arrive at the station.
Well, let's have the money there for it. Yeah. We had the money there.
And everybody in the Southeast, not just the state, has to go to Atlanta to the airport. So we all care about traffic in the Atlanta area because we all have to go there.
Right. So just to be pie in the sky in terms of my thinking about this, if in fact that mythical high-speed rail ever developed between, say, Savannah, Macon, and Atlanta, isn't that another piece of the potential for economic development in Middle Georgia?
Absolutely. Listen, if folks folks had an easy way to get to Atlanta or get from Atlanta down here, we'd be busting at the seams, Bill.
Absolutely.
It's a great place to live. It's a great place to work.
Way better
folks
than anywhere in between.
So, Jim?
And we have water. We have lots of water.
Good water.
And you got good music.
Yeah. Great music. No, we have great music.
Galloway is such a crowd pleaser, isn't he? I'll tell you
way
what.
Way cheaper housing.
And cheaper housing. Thank you, Lori. Let's do this. Why don't we get our second break of the show out of the way? Olivia, Reingold, Tom Faust have been collecting questions that you've all written down. So why don't we get a break in, and then when we come back, we'll look at some of the questions that you have for our panel. This is Political Rewind. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. We have a great panel here tonight and also a wonderful studio audience. Thank you, audience. Charles Richardson, a former columnist, editorial writer for the Macon Telegraph, has been here tonight. Charles, I want you get a minute or so to give us your feedback on what you've heard tonight that matters to you.
Well, what matters to me is this: we've got a great panel. They all have different perspectives of what's going on. And so far, John Kennedy has given the best explanation for a flexible president that I've ever heard. But the state of our state government and how it affects Middle Georgia, having Rewind come down here and see all these people in person, I think that's great. Want you to come back anytime. You're welcome.
Thank you, Charles. And we want you back on Rewind. All right, I do have a bunch of questions for you. The first one is a pretty basic, and this one I'm going to go down the line on, and I'll start with you, Lori. Will Georgia, or is Georgia, turning blue?
Maybe purple.
More than it has been in the past, the tide has ebbed and it's coming in the opposite direction.
I would agree with him. I think it's turning, but not as fast as was predicted 2, 3, 4 years ago.
I think purple as well.
I think maybe 3 or 4 election cycles.
Okay, and that was the next question. So, if it is turning purple, what does it mean? Are we going to see any state constitutional officer, any Democrat elected to a state constitutional office in 2018? Do you imagine? Is it turning purple enough for that, Senator?
No, Bill, I don't think so. We've got really good Republican candidates, and I don't think if there is a tide or a change, it's not coming that quickly. No.
If I were a betting man and you forced me to put a bet on that, there are two that I'd place. I'd put a bet on John Barrow for Secretary of State, a Democrat, former congressman. I'd also put I'd put a little bit of money on Doug Stoner, who's running against Tricia Pridemore in the PSC race. It's a statewide race, but it's Cobb County centric.
Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on that real quick?
I would just say that I think that that's a good prediction. Oftentimes what happens when the minority party makes a historic victory is when the majority party fumbles. And so it's kind of in the Republicans' hand to fumble the ball, and that could happen in this election.
Okay, let's move on. 2018 was the first time in at least 7 years, according to the person who wrote this question, that none of the proposed anti-immigration legislation in the General Assembly passed. What do you think finally made the difference this time? Senator, what do you think? There were several bills that would have been tougher on undocumented immigrants, but what do you think? Is the mood changing in the General Assembly?
I think it's changing somewhat. I think what's going on in the national scene, of course, there's so much talk about immigration from President Trump's administration to the building of a wall to all of those issues has raised the level of consciousness about immigration issues overall. So, yeah, I think there's been more issues, more attention paid.
You know, Jim, what's interesting about that is when Governor Deal started his tenure, he very early in his tenure proposed some very tough immigration restrictions that passed the legislature. And for a while, there were a lot of people demonstrating against him, protesting him. But that was very early in his tenure. And as I always love to say, the last thing in the world he ever would want to hear me say on the show is that he's become a progressive governor. But in a lot of ways, he has.
Well, yeah, what Senator Kennedy left out here was the phrase Amazon.com. So that has had a lot of impact. And look, between here and Atlanta, you've got this thriving movie industry now. And that makes a tremendous difference on what kind of bills you want to represent your state with.
All right, let's move on. What is the most, we have a number of people in this room asked about gun safety, gun control measures. What is the most promising legislation for gun control? What will it take to get it passed in Georgia and beyond that nationally? I'm Senator again, because you're the elected leader in the room. We had the bump stock legislation that Mary Margaret Oliver put forward. Do we have some other?
There was a bill, and Senator, help me out here, because the session was a blur. There was a bill that would have prevented Georgia from stripping away those judged mentally unfit. To receive
right.
A gun after
right now,
5 years.
After 5 years.
Did that bill pass?
I believe it did pass.
Okay, so
yes.
That did pass.
Okay. So is it just fair to say that there really is not a great deal of appetite in the legislature, or it wasn't, for much in the way of gun control or what people call gun control measures?
I think that's right. I think, of course, we had some really horrible, tragic events that occurred. But as you guys and everyone listening knows, a lot of the things that unfold during the session are the product of a lot of pre-session planning and pre-filing of bills and folks thinking of what do we want to focus on. And so there wasn't that kind of focus leading into the session. And I think to some extent there's also a lot of folks that look to what's going on in Washington from a standpoint of that's where the main legislation that's going to affect the nation is going to come from. Things are going to be driven more on a federal level than they are on a state level anyway.
I agree with the senator. A lot of it is pre-planning, and I think after all of the marches that took place after the tragedies, I think there's going to be pressure on legislators to introduce legislation that will deal with some of the gun control. So I look to see in next session, I think there's going to be quite a bit of legislation presented.
Jim, you know, it's interesting. Mary Margaret Oliver said on the show on Wednesday that she thinks if Parkland had come earlier before the session really got underway, there might have been steam that would have built toward
it. There might have, but you have to remember, I mean, the state is in the hands of Republicans. And we have a little fracas in the Republican race for governor going right now, where it is a gaffe is considered a statement in which you say maybe you ought to be 21 before you can buy an AR-15. He's backed off it now.
Yes, I do want to read another note on gun safety. And I don't know if this person wants to be identified or not. My 8-year-old was threatened by a little boy in her class yesterday. He said he would shoot her. The school handled it. And she is okay, but tell me, how can I feel she is safe when so many politicians are basically getting support from NRA? I mean, it seems to me that's where the momentum is going to come from. Yes, Lori?
Yes, and this idea that somehow we can't do anything about it, when we can, it may not always be successful, but what law is? According to that logic, we wouldn't pass any laws because they wouldn't ultimately be always successful everywhere. So there are things we can do, and when it's our children's lives at stake, we should.
Yeah. And I think
that was you. I'm very sorry that your daughter went through that.
She's a very strong little girl, and she had no fear in telling her teacher what happened. But I feel like I should note, especially for Senator Kennedy, I'm a Mercer political science graduate, and I actually interned for Saxby Chambliss.
Okay, thank you.
I just think that there are going to be a whole lot of organization around presenting some really good gun legislation. I can think off the top of my head, I can think of a good one. You should be 200 years old to buy an AK-50.
we're almost out of time. Jim and Senator Kennedy, I'll throw this to both of you. One of the questions was, how come Macon is an all-Democratic or mostly Democratic city, and we have two Republican senators representing the Macon area, which...
How do you draw?
So if this were Democratic-controlled legislature, the question might be the opposite. It might be, how come in this Republican area we have two Democrats? This is all about gerrymandering, isn't it? And are we ever going to do something about that?
Supreme Court might.
I think Senator David Lucas might take exception to that, though. Senator David Lucas actually represents the Mercer campus.
Democrat. That's right. Of course.
Yeah, Bill, really, it's you have one Republican and one Democrat, Senator David Lucas.
Thank you.
The two of us represent Bibb County.
Of course. Yes. I should have thought about that. Thank you.
And the member of the audience wanted to know what could be done about it. Well, if you are a Democrat, you really, really have to pay, you have to put all your money on the gubernatorial race. Georgia isn't changing fast enough so that there's going to be no shift in control in the state House or the state Senate.
All right, I'm going to turn to the political science professors, and we're really short on time, because I rarely disagree with him, but I do right now. Because if Democrats take control, then we will have Democratic gerrymandering in the state. The answer is, how do we deal with reapportionment, removing the partisanship from it? And isn't that what the courts are going to spend much of this year looking at?
There's a case before the Supreme Court right now. And the main thing that's changed is the political science is so much better that we can gerrymander almost perfectly.
Sure, the computers can do it for us.
So the sophistication of the techniques for drawing these lines has caused us to really question, you know, whether this is how we want to run our democracy.
I was on a panel with a couple of Democratic lawmakers a while back, and they were complaining about the gerrymandering. And I said, well, but the Republicans learned it from you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like this was a new thing that came around only when the Republicans.
In this state, learned it from Roy Barnes and Bobby
Absolutely.
Kahn.
I mean, did more in that and creative and flexible thinking about districting. I think unless you establish some standards that have to be in place, maybe a nonpartisan commission, you're going to have gerrymandering. And I think gerrymandering hurts the body politic in general. One thing that I think we have some advantage of is that we have someone like Senator Kennedy that represents a lot of different people, and that generally pushes toward having to be consensus
right.
builder.
We're virtually out of time, but Galloway, I don't want to go to bed tonight without resolving our slight argument.
Look, if Democrats want a seat at the table during redistricting, they got to win the governor's race. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely, I agree with that. All right, we are completely out of time for this edition of Political Rewind. I want to thank Galloway, of course, but also Chris Grant and Lori Johnson, John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy, Nikki Randall for being here. My thanks to Tom Faust, Olivia Rheingold, Tyler Morris, Chris Booth for your work on the show. And thanks to all of you in the audience for being here for Political Rewind today. Thank you all so much. We'll see you all on Monday for a new show.